From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, DNA results from elongated skulls in Peru, and a special hello to Green and Malone, new listeners, Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining the group. Here's what's happening. A bill has been introduced in California that would mandate a kill switch for cell phones that have been stolen, prompting concerns, though, that such a system could be abused by authorities in order to stifle dissent. It's called SB 962, and it would require that all cell phones sold in the state include software or hardware that can render inoperable the essential features of the device. Now, I don't like this, let me tell you, because this is true. You remember what happened during the Arab Spring. Young people used their smartphones, social networking, to get on the streets, to protest about real abuses. Could you imagine this happening here in the United States? People are out protesting. They're sending little text messages, and they're on Facebook and Twitter to their friends saying, come on out and join us. And then all of a sudden, some government leader says, kill the phones. They're done. Could happen. Allowing airline passengers, by the way, to make cell phone calls in flight is asking for trouble. Lawmakers said this as a House panel approved a bill to ban such calls. The bill passed without opposition by the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee requires the Department of Transportation to issue regulations prohibiting such calls. The department has already said it is considering creating such a ban as part of its consumer protection role. The bill, by the way, has no impact on the Federal Aviation Administration's decision late last year to allow passengers to email, text, surf the internet, and download data using smartphones. In Houston, prosecutors are painting a sadistic picture of two accused teenage killers charged with the murder of a 15-year-old girl. They say a 17-year-old boy convinced a friend to kidnap and murder a teenage girl to help him sell his soul to the devil. What is wrong with people? Former NBC News anchor Tom Brokaw is being treated for cancer. Doctors are very encouraged by the progress he's making. He's 74 years old, diagnosed with a cancer affecting blood cells in the bone marrow. His doctors are optimistic about the treatment. He sat in the anchor chair at NBC Nightly News from 1982. Until he stepped aside in 2004 to be a special correspondent for the network. He's a great newsman, great reporter. Former Hollywood child star Shirley Temple has died at the age of 85. With her adorable charm and little blonde curls, she was one of the most popular stars of the 1930s in hit movies like Bright Eyes and Stand Up and Cheer. And after retiring from films in 1950 at the age of only 21, Temple returned to the spotlight later as a politician, as a diplomat. She died Monday at her home in Woodside, California, from natural causes. The House of Representatives has passed an increase in the government's debt limit after the Republicans simply gave up on their attempt to win concessions from the Democrats in return. The House voted to waive the $17.2 trillion debt limit for 1 year. Meanwhile, U.S. stocks surged on Tuesday, the Dow Jones Industrial rising triple digits. Why? Federal Chairperson Janet Yellen has reassured Wall Street that the Fed would continue the central bank's policy of providing monetary stimulus to bolster the economy. Well, let's check in with investment advisor Catherine Austin Fitz, who heads up Solari.com. Well, Catherine, there's a little good news to cheer about, they think, huh?
Well, you know, everybody's trying to put their best foot forward. So Congress is fixing the debt limit problem, and Yellen is assuring everybody that Bernanke's policies will continue. But she, you know, she is going to continue the taper, George. So if you look at charts of the stock market, it's very much trended up with the, there's very direct correlation with the purchases by the Fed. So, you know, the market is skittish as we taper. They're curious to see how the equity markets are going to do.
What quarter do you think will convince all of us that things are a little more robust with the economy? Second quarter, third quarter? Do we have to wait till the end of the year?
Here's what's going to happen. I think by the end of the year we'll have a picture of how this is going, but we're going to continue to see very strong sectors where new technology is being applied, but that's not going to be good for household income. We're going to continue to see the squeeze on the middle class. And I think the big question mark, and you'll really see it come out in the congressional elections this year, is what are we going to do about automation, both reducing employment in this country and globalizing it? So there's a big discussion. So some parts of the population are going to feel that the economy is dreadful, while there'll be many parts that feel it's just great. You know, Texas is in a boom.
Yeah,
so
they are.
It's very spotty.
All right, Catherine, thanks so much. Your website, solari.com. If you have a little one and you use a car seat, and it's from a company called Graco, listen up. In one of the biggest such recalls ever, Graco has agreed to recall 3.7 million child car seats manufactured in recent years, even as it officially contests a government request to recall nearly 1.8 million more over a buckling issue. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration announced that Graco is voluntarily recalling 11 of 18 model seats that the government agency had asked it to recall. At issue, the red button release in the center of the harness can become difficult to unlatch or can become stuck, and that can make it difficult, maybe even impossible, to remove the child quickly in an emergency. By the way, there is a chance of Earth-directed flares again, this one from Sunspot AR 1974. Astronomers are watching the sun on this one. They are predicting maybe some M flares, much better than an X flare, to be sure. Lake Superior hasn't completely frozen over in 2 decades, but they say it's going to happen this year because of the record cold we've been having, so we'll get ready for that. And are there pockets of life on the moon? Scientists say ice on the lunar surface could be hiding the building blocks needed for simple organisms to evolve. There's also water flowing on Mars. What's going on with that? Let's check in with Robert Zubrin. He's the expert on Mars. This is exciting. If there's water on Mars and it's liquid, Robert, isn't that going to make your journey to Mars a little easier?
Well, it makes it a lot more compelling. Everywhere on Earth where there is water, there is life. And now we're seeing some pretty strong evidence here that there's flowing liquid water on Mars today.
Now, what's new with the Mars Society and the push for to get people on Mars?
Well, with the Mars Society, we're doing a couple things. Number one, we have this international Inspiration Mars Design Contest. 38 teams representing 56 universities from 15 different countries. These are engineering students. They've entered a contest to design a two-person human Mars flyby mission. You know, Dennis Tito's Inspiration Mars said they want to do a two-person flyby mission, but they came up with a design that would cost $1 billion. They can't do it on private money, which means they can't do it. So we are challenging the engineering students of the world to come up with a better design, one that's really doable, and we've got 56 universities participating.
Good for you. This is exciting, Robert. Thank you for being part of Coast to Coast and giving us that great information. Hey, listen to this. Some scientists are now claiming that the Shroud of Turin is real. Apparently, back in 33 AD, there was an earthquake, a huge one, in Jerusalem. After the crucifixion, they say, it could have caused radioactive reaction and confused dating techniques because, you know, they did some carbon dating recently and found that the Shroud was only 728 years old. That's been tossed out now because of what these scientists are saying. It could be real. Well, we're going to do something on a future Coast to Coast show. This is way too significant. And in a moment, we're going to be talking with Linda Stacy about some of her work. It's incredible. The Sixth Station, that's next on Coast to Coast AM. Linda Stacy is back. She, of course, is the very popular columnist for the New York Daily News. Just been nominated, by the way. Congratulations for an Edgar Award by the Mystery Writers of America for her very first novel, which is called The Sixth Sense, The Sixth Station. The novel, although fiction, is solidly based in fact, and it took Stacy 6 years through a number of countries, a road trip with an exorcist from the Vatican, a long stay with monks who guarded a relic, which she believes contains the DNA of Jesus, by the way, a stay with a cloistered nun in the mountains of Italy who studies the relic, 2 mountain climbs, and being escorted to a sacred site in France by a motorcycle gang to research her book. What this fact-based reporter did not count on during the writing of The Sixth Station would be to experience miracles and other events so bizarre that she'll talk about. And of course, she's been an on-camera co-host with a television program called What's a Week for the past 12 years and has won numerous awards, including Best Columnist, Best Humor Columnist by News Women's Club of New York. Welcome back, Linda. How are you?
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm looking forward
to this.
Our
last bizarre interview.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit later on, too. So what is new with you? I mean, this interesting book that you've been writing, because you're working on one called The Book of Judas. We'll get into that.
Right.
The Sixth Station. That's a novel, but it's based on fact, isn't it?
Right. Well, this is actually going to be based on fact, too. And I have to tell you, you know, as a tabloid journalist, the last thing I wanted to do was do anything that took more than an hour. You know, you can call me up and say, I found the cure for cancer. And I'll say, hurry up, I've got an hour to write it. So, you know, 6 years of anything and being, I really feel that I was sent into this portal of otherworldliness that I think something opened up. I've never been in such a situation in my life. So I was kind of glad when and relieved to finally finish that book. And then other crazy things started happening to me, and I realized I had to research this lost book of Judas, which is what I've been doing for the last year now.
These strange occurrences that follow you, so this is nothing new, is it?
Well, I've always been very psychically connected since I was a child. But, you know, I'm a reporter. Everything I do has to be fact-based. So when things that were completely inexplicable, such as my getting a call from my friend when I was in Italy and she was in a coma. And
Hold on. You're saying you got a call from a friend?
Yes.
While she was still in a coma?
I didn't even know she was in a coma.
Now, how did she pull that off unless something supernatural happened?
So this is what's crazy. I was in a cathedral in Italy where they had this mummified saint, and I was studying it, and all of a sudden I had bought a little cell phone that worked in Europe, because this was 5 years ago or 6 years ago, and I hadn't given her the number, and the phone rang, and, you know, when you're in a cathedral in Italy, the phone rings, you know, you're lucky you get out of there alive, so, you know, so I ran out of the cathedral, and I listened to the voicemail, and it said, hi, please call me. And I called, I hit return right away, and nothing happened. And about an hour later, I got a call from my daughter who said, Mom, you have to come home. Donna's in a coma. I said, well, she just called me. I've been trying to call her back. She said, well, what do you mean she just called you? I said, and then I realized I hadn't given the number to anybody because it was just a toss phone that I bought in the airport.
Oh, boy.
And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, she's been in a coma for 3 days. Or 4 days, and we're at her bedside now. I said, but she called me from home. She said, nobody's there. The house is locked up.
It's intention. It works. When they have to communicate, they will. But this has been going on with you for a long time, hasn't it?
Yes. But when I started writing the book, it really accelerated to the point that I was experiencing things on a daily basis. Now, you know, when you make your living as a reporter, you can't just go around, now I'm out, you know, I'm out of the closet, I'm telling the truth. But, you know, you just can't go around telling people, I had a refrigerator magnet of St. Veronica and it started bleeding on my, you know, and I was like, what? Well, I had this little magnet that a friend gave me because she knew I was writing about St. Veronica. And St. Veronica is holding these flowers in this magnet. All of a sudden, the thing started bleeding. I swear to God, it started bleeding. And a week later, I was This is terrible, but thank God he's okay. I was in an accident with my baby grandson.
Oh, my God.
And he was bleeding, and I was holding him just like the magnet in the emergency room.
That's strange. So this just keeps happening to you?
Yes, it happens to me all the time. And not to this, as I said, not to the extent that has happened when I started writing the book. So I started, I thought, okay, I'm done. Thank God this book is finished. I don't want to put myself through this anymore. And we have a little house at the beach, and I was at the beach, and I find this book called The Gospel of Judas, written by Taylor Caldwell in the 70s. This is just a few months ago, and I thought, this is interesting. I never saw this book before, and we've had the house for 12 years. So I started reading it, and a week later, I was in Princeton, New Jersey, and I was at the bookstore there, and there it is on the table, The True Gospel of Judas. I meant Judas. The True Gospel of Judas by Elaine Pagels. You know, she's a famous scholar and researcher. And I thought, well, here it is two times in a very short period of time. Never heard of this before. So as I'm reading her book, she says that this gospel had been found in Egypt in the 1970s. And it had this bizarre journey, and nobody wanted to buy it, and it ended up, and I'm reading and reading, it ended up in a safety deposit box, okay, in New York, okay, in Hicksville, Long Island, wait a minute, that's where I was brought up, in the Citibank branch on Broadway. That was the branch where I had my first bank account, and my parents had their bank account.
Somebody's trying to tell you something, Linda.
How is this possible? Gosh. With the millions upon millions of banks and branches in the world, this tremendous gospel ends up rotting in a bank where I had my account as a child.
So when you went on these research trips for your work, you went through how many countries? Six, seven, something
six,
like that?
Six, and six. I've been through, I just went to Israel for this one.
And did strange things happen in every country you went to?
Not necessarily in every country, but they would happen either on the road or when I got back. Things just started piling up when I got back. Now, when I went to Israel just recently, I stayed with my husband's extended family. They took me to a guy, one of the cousins' houses, who's an artist and a scholar and a Kabbalist. And he said, oh, I'd like to show you my basement. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm all for a finished basement and a nice beverage. You know? Well, his basement was a 2,000-year-old burial chamber.
Hmm.
So as soon as I arrived at the house...
He didn't have plans to capture you and toss you in there, did he? Weirder things have happened to you.
Yes, I know. The lights went out. Here's where it gets weird. So the whole family said, well, wait a minute. The lights have never gone out before. I said, well, welcome to my world.
Yeah.
So I'm down in this 2,000-year-old burial chamber with just candles, so which is bizarre enough. And when I left, and my husband's Jewish family is like my Italian family. It takes about 70 years for people to actually walk out of the house from the time they start saying goodbye. So I finally said, listen, I'm going outside. The second I went outside, the lights went back on. The second
Go
I
figure,
went outside.
Right? I mean, I get so many emails from people who walk by streetlights and they go out.
Yes.
They've got this kind of energy.
Yes.
We're going to take a break pretty soon, Linda, but I want to get into this trip you took with the exorcist priest.
Okay.
How in the heck you did that. And then we'll get into some other things. A very strange thing happened when you were on with me a year ago.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about that, get your reaction to that, because I think you've come up with some of your own conclusions over.
But George, I don't want to say anything, but when I was on hold, I heard it again.
When?
When I was on
Today?
Hold waiting to come on, yes.
Well, then
something weird's
happening.
I heard it
or
again.
My theory, I've got a prankster in my building somewhere. But we'll talk about that.
Does the prankster ever get to anyone else?
No. No, and they can't just say anything to you when you're on hold. So we're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Linda Stacy with us, author of The Sixth Station and also the book of Judas. Linda, tell us about this traveling trip with an exorcist priest. How did it come about? Where did you go and what happened?
Well, I want to tell you that I love you on Ancient Aliens. You're just great. Anyway.
I'm just a small little part of that.
But the
home run
you're
people.
You're riveting when you're on there.
The Giorgio Tsoukalos and those folks, they do the great job.
Oh, yes, but you're just terrific when you're on there.
Thanks.
It's my favorite show. Anyway.
Thanks, thanks, sis.
So I, when I was researching the Sixth Station, I met a man that in New York City who was visiting. His name was Father Peter Jacobs, and I'd met him years before. And when I was doing the book, I called him up, and he was stationed at the Vatican. And I said, "Hey, would you like to take a road trip with me?" And he said, "Okay, where?" And I said, "I believe that the Rail of Veronica exists." He said, "He's the one who originally told me that the Vatican has a fake copy." And he said, "Well, you know, the one we have here at the Vatican isn't real." So I said, "Well, I think I found the real one, and would you like to come with me?" And he said yes. And I'd heard that he was an exorcist, but I didn't confirm it until we were on the trip. And he said yes. He said the Vatican has several of us. They keep it on the down low, but that's, you know, he said, "I'm actually registered with the Vatican to do this," or certified, whatever it was. And I said, "You've got to be kidding me." He said no. And I said, "Do you really believe that possession can happen?" And he said, "Well, you know, the joke is that if the family's rich, the kid's possessed. If the family's poor, they're just junkies." He said, "But that's not really true." He said that he had actually presided at several that he believed to be the real deal, one of which was from a very famous family, a very wealthy and famous family. And he believed that, in fact, it was actually true. So when we got to the monastery where this Veil of Veronica is held, he and I approached the monks, and they said, "Sure, you know, we'd love to show it to you." And they take it out, and it's on an altar, and they took it out, and they let me photograph it. And as I started photographing it, the image changed on every picture. In some, the image of Jesus was sort of smiling, on some he was scowling. And I turned my camera to Father Jacobs, and I said, "Look at this. These images have changed." And boom, he fainted dead away on the altar.
He fainted?
Yes, he was an 80-year-old guy, and he fainted dead away on the altar. Oh. And now I'm thinking, I have a dead priest on my hands.
Oh, great.
I have to get back to Rome. The priest and I kind of revived him a little bit, and I said, "Well, we need to get an ambulance." And they said, "No, he'll be fine." I said, "What do you mean he'll be fine?" They said, "He's just experiencing a spiritual
awakening." It sounds like he does this all the time.
And they seemed to understand it. I was panicky. So we carried him to a little room, and he slept for 12 hours. Now, I kept going back and saying, "Father Jake, are you, you know, listening to whether he was breathing?" And then when he came back to, I said, "What happened?" He said, "I was overcome because I believe I saw the face of Jesus, and I was just overcome."
And for folks who don't know, the Veil of Veronica, it's that had the blood-stained image, we think, of Jesus, did it not, when he was carrying the cross?
Well, it's not blood. It's there, although this veil does
or could be sweat.
Blood, it's just an image. So the Shroud of Turin, as it turns out, is a negative.
He had horns in his head, and he had blood coming down his forehead, didn't he?
Yes. But this image has a face with some blood drops, and it looks like his nose is broken, and there's some blood drops. But what happened was that the legend was that a woman named Veronica, who was the wife of a centurion, wiped Jesus' face as he was walking, carrying the cross. And his image appeared. But what the monks believe, and I believe, is that 2,000 years ago, when a Jewish man died and he was laid in the tomb, first they'd put a veil on his face or a napkin, and then they'd wrap a shroud around it. When Jesus arose from the tomb, the energy was so gigantic that it formed this actual, it's like a photo, a see-through photo, and the shroud therefore became the negative because it was laying on top of this. So I believe that we have a negative and a positive, and it truly has the face of Jesus. I believe that to be true.
All right. Now back to the exorcist for a moment. Did he, you know, what happened?
Well, he was fine after that, and we went back to Rome, and then he took me through parts of the Vatican that people haven't seen. Now, here's where it gets bizarre again. 2 years later, he died, and I got a call. I happened to be in Italy again. I got a call from a friend of his at midnight and said, Father Jake has passed, and his last request was that you break into his apartment in Vatican City and take out the stuff that he doesn't want the Vatican to get their hands on.
Whoa, like what?
Well, that's what I said. He said, the one thing, you must take his laptop. I said, okay. And he said, and there are books and there are pictures. He said, just pile them up and get them back to the United States.
All right, so you go and do this?
I went and did this. I got somebody who knew him, who knew where he had kept the key, and I got into the apartment, and he had a laptop. But the laptop was locked with a key. I don't mean a virtual key. I mean a lock-in key.
A real key.
And I thought, okay, let me try getting this baby through customs.
Yeah, exactly.
Because back then they made you open your computer. Remember that?
Yeah.
So, and there were all kinds of photos, a lot of stuff written in Latin and in Italian that I couldn't understand. There were also first editions of books written by Norman Mailer and people like that who were saying, thank you for all your help. I just packed everything up and I put the computer in a box and I shipped it because I was never going to get that through customs. When it's locked with a key.
Now, did you ever get into it?
I did.
What was it? What was in there?
He had part of a memoir. He was writing a memoir.
About his role as an exorcist?
Yes, yes. And he did not want the Vatican to see it. Now, I couldn't keep the computer because I was told I had to bring it to the home of this doctor in New York City. I know it all sounds very Rosemary's Baby. He actually
This is like an intriguing Mission Impossible mission here.
I know. And he was a gynecologist obstetrician, just like Rosemary's Baby. And that's what I had to do. I had to take these things and deliver to him, no questions asked, although I asked questions, I didn't get any answers. And that's what I had to do.
What was so important? What about the pictures, Linda? And what about the books? What were the books?
Well, he had a lot of very, very old Bibles, one of which I did snatch. Couldn't help myself. Wouldn't you? I mean, I did all this. I should get one little reward.
I guess.
But they looked hundreds of years old. And some of them were in Latin. And then he had a lot of photographs of him from... This is what's really crazy. Turns out he was a Jewish guy who, during World War II, had a vision of Jesus when he was a Navy guy.
Well, wait a minute. I thought he was a priest from the Vatican.
He was. But during World War II, he had a miraculous vision, he said, which changed his life. He became, after the war, he became Catholic and somehow became a Catholic priest and somehow rose through the ranks to be, he was kind of like the CIA for the Vatican. He did things for the Vatican, not only the exorcist things, but things that the Vatican didn't want to admit to. And that's what he did.
Now, the pictures, did they illustrate him doing any exorcisms or anything like that?
No, but there were pictures of him from the 1940s through the 1970s. And some of them he was with, like, famous people, and some of them he looked like he'd been They didn't say where it was, but it looked like it was in Africa or India, with people surrounding him. I can only speculate what they were. I don't know whether he went there to do exorcisms. But, you know, now, all of a sudden, exorcism in the Vatican is out in the open.
It's very out in the open.
Pope Francis did a mini exorcism. He's calling for other exorcists to that he wants to actually hire for the Vatican. So I think, you know, at first I thought Father Jake was a loony, but I think, in fact, this is a very ongoing thing with the Vatican that they have kept really under wraps. Do you believe that?
Probably. And I would guess that these classic old Bibles that he had were used in actual exorcisms.
I believe that they were. I believe absolutely that they were. And I felt compelled to just take one, and I did. And I've always been kind of even reluctant to open it because it feels weird to me. It has a very weird vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that sounds crazy. I'm sorry if you think I'm crazy, but
no,
I just
think you're crazy.
Didn't feel comfortable with it, although I have it.
You have then been getting these strange warnings from deceased friends, loved ones. What do you think personally is happening, and why you?
If I could answer that, I'd be a very rich woman. I don't know what's happening, although I think that I've always, since I was a child, believed that there's much more going on than we know, and that if we only use like something like 7.25% of our brain. What if you use 7.5%? What portals would open up? What would you know? And I think that I was given this mission to write these books. And I think that because I'm a journalist and because I'm an agnostic, I'm not a true believer, that it was, I combined the two things they need, whoever out there needed these things. To have the brain of a journalist, the mind of an agnostic, and the understanding that the world is much bigger than we tiny people think it is.
But these warnings to you, Linda, I mean, are they done because something is about to happen to you, to us, or nobody?
Very many times there are things that are going to happen to me. But other times, for example, 2 weeks, or a week, I think it was a week before Hurricane Sandy hit. I was with my entire family at our beach house, which is on the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay.
And it was about 3:00 in the morning, and I woke up to this horrible roar that almost, it was earth-shattering. I panicked. I ran to the window. There was nothing going on. I ran outside. Nothing going on, but the noise was so gigantic. So I woke up my whole family. I said, we have to get out of here. I think we're going to have a tidal wave. And they were like, you're crazy. I said, no, please, we have to leave. And I said, listen to it. Can't you hear it? And nobody heard anything. Nobody. And they went back to sleep and just said, oh, it's crazy mom again.
And then bang.
A week later, Sandy hit. My whole town was wiped out. By the way.
All right. So are you picking up anything now?
No. I also did see the Twin Towers from Long Island the day before they fell down as we were driving. And I said to my husband, look at that. But we can see the Twin Towers from here. He said, what? I said, look, I can't believe it's so clear we can see the Twin Towers. He said, there's no Twin Towers. And the next day we had the attack.
Well, as a journalist, how do you explain this?
I don't.
You can't.
I don't. I mean, I don't explain it. I understand it. And I don't know where it's coming from. I understand it. I don't explain it. And it's only in my recent times that I've actually, as I said, come out of the closet and admitted these things. Because, you know, you go in a newsroom and you say, oh, I just had a vision this morning. You get laughed out and thrown out with the garbage.
Jeez.
But, you know, if these things happen to you, they happen to you. And you can't live a lie. It's what it is.
Well, you write about it, I guess.
Yes.
When you were working on the Book of Judas, did you have any strange, did any strange things happen to you? Because most of these were the sixth station, right? These events?
Well, the Bible, as I said, that was, that's where it began, that it turned out it was hidden in a bank vault, as I had as a child. So I was driven that I wanted to trace where the Bible came from and so forth. And I, as I said, I went to Israel. And a family member, the most important story in the whole Jesus scenario is the betrayal of Judas in the Garden of Gethsemane, although we call it Gethsemane, but it's actually pronounced Gethsemane, where he was betrayed. So I went to the garden, and a family member took a picture of me, took several pictures of me, and every picture in that area of me was all bifurcated, is that what you call it?
Chopped up.
My head was here, my chest was on the side, my feet were somewhere else. Another one, I was holding a camera I didn't even have. She was using my camera to take my picture. Every one of them.
Are you glad that these things are happening to you?
Yes. Yes.
No qualms about that.
No. I've never been frightened by it. I've never been one of these people that would say, oh, scary, spooky. No, I think it's just another dimension. I don't think it's scary or spooky. I'm grateful that it's happened to me because it leads me to understand things that I would never have even thought about. Would you be frightened if it happened to you?
Nah, I've long passed the frightened stage, Linda.
Exactly.
You know, I'm more into the why stage and what does it mean? What's the message here?
Right.
I just got a call from a friend of mine, Robert Davi, the actor. He called me before the show, and he was involved in a car accident. He's okay, and the people who cut in front of him, they're okay. But, you know, these things happen for a certain bizarre reason, and, you know, he's trying to recognize what that might have been. And, you know, I guess you just got, you have to accept it. It happens. You have to accept it. You have to interpret it and move on, I guess.
Yes. And do something with it. If it's important, you need to do something with it. I mean, when I heard the sound of the ocean and I knew that, and I kept saying, it's a tidal wave is coming. I knew something bad was going to happen. I didn't know it would be a hurricane. I didn't know what it was. I just knew that something was going to happen and there was going to be an incident with the ocean.
See, that happens a lot, though, with people. They feel an event, but they don't know what it is, nor do they know when it's going to happen or where.
Right.
Now, some people are pretty good at it. They're remote viewers. They can pick up some certain things. But I think most of us, by and large, pick up on things, but we just don't know where or when or what.
You know, I was also in the Dominican Republic before the Japanese tsunami, and we were walking along the beach, and I said to my husband, there's going to be some, I said, I can see the ocean rising. There's going to be a terrible event, and I think it's going to be here. And he said, I don't think so. It happened to be in Japan, but it happened within days. But I saw it. I saw that ocean rising.
All right. Linda, stay with us. We're going to come back for another hour with you. Linda Stacy, our guest, the sixth station. And also, you know, you were talking with us about that voice you heard back a year ago. And there is no way you can hear it on hold tonight. So we're going to talk about that, talk about my suspicions. But I do want to get yours when we come back.